The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
One of the amazing benefits of fasting that actually troubles some people is that it's good for you physically. It's good for your body. In the past, people would die because of hunger, because they didn't eat enough. Now, many people die because of their poor diets. They're so sick because they're constantly eating way too much and eating things that are bad for us. And then we think to ourselves, well, I don't want to fast only because it's good for my health. It's okay. It's okay to do something that's pleasing to God and also good for your body. That's all right. If you struggle with purity of intention, this is where being Marian really comes into play. Because if we're offering everything to Our Lady anyways, she's the only one who really has genuine, pure intentions with everything that she does. We offer our fasting to her, and she offers it to the Lord, pure and undefiled.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, you know, I thought I'd give you a sneak peek. It's something that has been very difficult for me recently. There was a time when I could fast, and it wasn't even hard. It was easy. And I know, and I've had these conversations in the past with men like Dr. Jay Richards and others about the medical benefits of fasting, how good it is for the body, what it does to the immune system, how it helps with weight loss, how it helps with everything from your sugar levels to so much more, right? We know the spiritual benefits of it. I've often talked about the power of this in terms of amplifying your prayer, right? Christ said that certain demons could only be cast out by what? Through prayer and fasting. So we know there's medical benefits. We know there's physical benefits. Some argue there are economic benefits to it. Today's Fat Tuesday, right? Fat Tuesday. And I think part of the problem with this day, some people say, oh my gosh, tomorrow's a fast day. It's Ash Wednesday. So I'm going to eat big. What I found is when I eat big the day before a fast day, boy, do I suffer on that fast day. You're almost better off not doing that to yourself, right? But it is Mardi Gras. It is Fat Tuesday. Tomorrow will be a day in which we begin our 40-day journey through Lent, make our way to the great Triduum of Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Easter Vigil on Holy Saturday, right? It's a time of penance, time of prayer, and it's time of almsgiving, too. It's another aspect that's sometimes overlooked. But fasting in our day and age is hard. It really is, because food is constantly being advertised. You can't escape it, right? You turn on the television, you're looking at the internet, you're driving in your car. It's constantly being promoted, and it can be addictive. There's a lot of addictive qualities to it. Fasting is supposed to be part of, it's supposed to be part and parcel of your Christian life, even when you're not in Lent. Remember the story of the Pharisees and the sinners who go up to the temple, they pray, and the Pharisees tell God, oh, I fast twice a week. Well, that actually gets continued in the early church. In one century, you know, there's some documents in the very first century where it tells people to fast not on Tuesdays and Thursdays as the Jews do, but on Wednesday and Friday. And I found that interesting. You know why? In some of Our Lady's apparition sites, modern-day apparition sites where she appears, she didn't call for fasting on Tuesdays and Thursdays. She's requested Wednesdays and Fridays. Of course, canon law tells you should be abstaining from meat on Friday, you know, throughout Lent, except on the solemnities when they fall. I mean, we should make sacrifice on days that are on Friday to remember the passion of our Lord, even if you're eating meat. But during Lent, as Christians, as Catholics, I should say, we're not, you know, supposed to eat meat. They're penitential days. But there's a renewed interest right now in fasting, and I want to get into it. And you can join me here if you want, 888-914-9149. Does this word resonate with you? The ketogenic diet, right? It's a buzzword. You know, you can see some of the elements of fasting in that. There's even an app you can set up. Keeps track of how many hours since your last ate. A bunch of those. There's some free ones. There's some ones you can log on to. But I think, in addition to the physical benefits of it, the real power comes in your spiritual life. It helps you to detach from things, not only from your desire for food, but if you are struggling in other areas of life, attachments to materialism, to sex, to pornography, to other things, as you begin to gain those spiritual muscles and self-mastery, you find you're able to conquer those things. And Satan doesn't want you doing this. So I've invited today a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute, the author of a book that's called Eat, Fast, Feast, Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul. He's been with me many times. Of course, he's the executive editor of The Stream, www.thedrewmariani.org. It's good to talk with Dr. Jay Richards once again. Doctor, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Drew. It's so good to be with you.
You know, we always have these conversations. There's so much to get into. Fasting's hard. Let's start with the basics. We can talk medical benefits, spiritual benefits. We can get into it all. It's physically hard. A lot of us don't fast. And when it comes time to do it, even just on this Ash Wednesday, Good Friday, it's torture for some. But bring us through the basics, if you could. What's a good way to get started? And give me the 101 is, you know, what are the benefits of it?
Yeah, I mean, well, let's start with why it's hard. It's hard because we're creatures of habit, and everything that modern Americans do is basically designed to make fasting hard. So, you know, we all know this. If you're used to getting up at 5 a.m, it's easier than if you never do it. If you eat 6 times a day or you're snacking constantly throughout the day, say 16 or 18 hours, so all your waking time, and then you say you're going to fast, which means you're going to go some amount of time without eating, it's going to be hard. The other thing is that what we don't realize is that the way we eat as modern Americans, the so-called standard American diet, is very high in refined carbohydrates. And so what that does is it uses one metabolic pathway. Our bodies have these two different ways of taking in food as fuel and then converting them. One is to convert carbohydrates to sugar, but the other is to convert fat into something called ketones. And so the sugar or glucose is one fuel, the ketones is another. Now, here's the kicker. Your body, that is your liver, it's not going to turn fat into ketones very much as long as you have carbohydrates coming in. So if you're eating refined carbohydrates all day, every day, quite frequently, you're not actually using that fat metabolism. Now, why does that matter? That matters because if your body is used to using that fat to ketone metabolic pathway, it actually makes fasting easy because your blood sugar stays stable. Your body, if you're not eating, just uses the fat stores that you have on your body for fuel. And for most of human history, that's how people live. You had a bunch to eat sometimes, very little or nothing to eat other times. So they were constantly using these two different pathways of their metabolism. Modern life, we just eat carbohydrates all day, every day. They're highly refined, and we eat really frequently. So we're doing exactly the opposite of what you'd want to do if you wanted fasting to be just a sacrifice as opposed to torture. And so, as you know, in my book, I say, look, if you want to adopt fasting as a lifestyle so that you do it permanently throughout the week and throughout the church calendar, the first thing you got to do is you got to habituate yourself by narrowing the amount of time during the day when you eat, and also at least temporarily converting to a so-called ketogenic way of eating in which you eat a lot of fat and very few carbs. Not forever, but for enough time to get that part of your body up and running.
I would love to kickstart the process. I really would. I said to my wife, I don't know what happens. Like this past year, all of a sudden, I just, you know, it's like my metabolism changed or something, you know, you know, the holidays are always terrible because you end up eating and drinking and normally you can lose it in January and February. I'm thinking, man, these pants, honey, you must've shrunk in them. It's not what I ate, right? This shirt's a little tighter. And I knew you were coming on. I thought, you know, in terms of fasting with your kicking your metabolism into higher gear or thyroid, there's a whole lot of things. I want to talk about it in terms of weight loss for people. I think spiritual is a big one. But let's talk intermittent fasting. You just hit on that. You know, certain times in which we can eat. And I think that's an important part of the conversation. You know, there's this diet, the intermittent fasting diet that people will only eat for that certain window. There's the 5-2 diet, which you might be familiar with Dr. Mosley. Yeah. I know intermittent fasting is good for weight loss. It improves your insulin sensitivity. It reduces inflammation. There's a lot of benefits for it. What is it about intermittent fasting? Because it doesn't seem that hard to do. If my last meal is at 6 and I don't eat again until noon, it doesn't seem like a difficult task, but that's 18 hours.
That's right. It's 18 hours. The main thing is it's different from what we normally do. I mean, if you were to look historically, until the 1960s or even the 1970s, most Americans ate 3 meals a day within about a 12-hour window. And so they didn't tend to eat right when they got up, and they certainly didn't eat right before they went to bed. People kind of had this sense that you're supposed to stop eating at dinner, but we got it in our heads. I taught this as a strength and fitness trainer in college, that you want to eat small meals throughout the waking hours. It keeps your metabolism steady. It keeps your body storing muscle. It doesn't store fat. It's all wrong. It turns out none of this is true, but we got it in our heads that it's actually healthy to eat frequently. And so if you're doing that, if you eat throughout the day, say 16 or 18 hours of your waking day, just saying, okay, now you're going to limit that to an 8-hour window, that's initially hard, but it's not that big a deal, and it's not that big a deal compared to what people did historically. And so that's really all intermittent fasting is. It just says intermittent in the sense that the 24-hour day is itself a time scale for fasting, and you increasingly basically limit the window of time in that 24-hour day when you eat. And so it could start with an 8-hour window, and then you can narrow it down to 4. And in fact, in my book, Eat Fast Feast, that's part of the plan during Lent, is that you start by getting your body used to consuming fat. Then you slowly narrow the window until you eventually get to where you're just eating one meal in a 1 hour period of a 24-hour day, which sounds crazy at the beginning. But once you do that, then you're ready to sort of take the next leap and to actually fast for more than one day.
In a long-term fast outside of intermittent fasting, because sometimes I get all pumped up. I go 18 hours, I can go 6 more, that's 24. And then if I can get through dinner, now I'm at 36 hours, right? So you can really begin to, and I think it gets easier after you do this for a little bit, at least that's what I discovered. Your body does something pretty peculiar then, right? It goes into autophagy. Is that what happens? Explain that as well and what that does for the body.
Yeah, this is the most important kind of health point, Drew, that people can understand, is that your body, your cells in your body have two different modes. They have the kind of go mode where they're consuming energy and they're keeping you going. And then they have a rest and recycle mode where they literally recycle. The word autophagy means self-eating. And so your cells, if they're in the rest and recycle mode, will recycle broken organelles, little parts of the cells. In fact, a famous biologist named Christian De Duve won the Nobel Prize for this discovery. But here's the key thing. When do your cells go into this recycle mode? Only when there's no food coming in. So the food coming in is the signal to your body to be in one or the other mode. The problem is that your cells really only go into autophagy, maybe starting at 18 hours, but it's really 24 to 36 hours. That's kind of the window of time in which your cells really say, okay, it's time to go into recycle mode. I'm absolutely convinced. I mean, at the moment, this is a hypothesis, but I am convinced that a lot of our health problems are the result of us not ever allowing ourselves to rest and recycle. And that's why you want to get to a phase physically where you can actually go every so often for these longer fasts, say 36 hours and up, which means that's 36 is the biggie. That's the window, or that's the hump, because that means you went sort of two nights without eating, right? You stop eating one night, you go to sleep, you go the whole next day, and then you go to sleep the second night, and you don't eat until the next morning. That's kind of the hump to get over, but it's also really important, I think, for long-term health.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I want to open the phones, too. If you want to join us, you can dial in 888-914-9149. We'll take your calls, your questions, maybe even your concerns. Feel free to be part of the conversation. Tomorrow is a fast day, and I know the church says you can have 3 meals. Your first 2 have to be small and can't add up to be larger than your main meal, and that should not be very big. But, when you might want to try intermittent fasting. You may want to make this your Lenten resolution, and I think you'll see a power to your prayer with it as well. Staying on the medical themes here as well, doctor, scientists are finding that fasting has all these medical benefits that have been overlooked for years, including improvements with people's blood pressure. And that always struck me. I could see cholesterol levels. I could see that. But blood pressure as well. And the study that they did, they were looking at fasting between 2 and 4 days can even reset your immune system. And I'm thinking about COVID, right? And I'm thinking, how many people have long COVID? How many people's immune systems have been compromised? So maybe you can address those things. I mean, blood pressure, cholesterol, and COVID, I think, are common denominators on a lot of people's lives. How efficacious is fasting regarding those areas of health concerns?
I think it can do all those things. I mean, the blood pressure is actually not that surprising. If you fast, and especially if you periodically go into ketosis, where your body's converting fat to ketones, The first thing your body does is it gets rid of fluids. People always notice this. They go on the ketogenic diet and they instantly lose 7 pounds.
Wow.
Bad news is that's water. It's not really fat right away, right?
Right.
But if you get rid, as long as you don't mess up your electrolytes, you get rid of a bunch of fluid, you're going to probably right away lower your blood pressure. And then the knock-on effects of a lifestyle fasting is inevitably going to lower your blood pressure if you have high blood pressure. Now, on the immune thing, here's the interesting thing. We now understand, or at least realize, that our so-called gut microbiome is very important to our immune response. These are the bugs that live, the healthy kind of symbiotic bugs in your gut.
Yeah.
And so we know, I mean, it's just sort of intuitive, but, you know, they feed on the things that you eat. So your microbiome depends upon your diet.
Yeah.
Well, as you can guess, if you don't eat for several days, you're going to starve some of them, right? And then you reset your microbiome depending upon what you start back up with eating. And so a lot of this, I would say we're at the, okay, there's evidence that this makes a difference, but we don't fully understand it yet phase in this. But I'm absolutely convinced that if you look at the increase of so-called diseases of civilization, so the stuff that most of us get sick with but maybe live 20 years with, that corresponds to our increase of a high carbohydrate diet and our dropping of fasting from our regimen. And so I'm absolutely convinced that there's both physical and spiritual cost to dropping fasting and benefits to picking it up.
Does it affect your liver and liver enzymes as well? Because I know when you have fat on some of those vital organs, those things increase as well. So I'm assuming by default it would, right?
Absolutely. And so the thing that you don't want is the fat that you see on the outside of your body, we maybe don't like it aesthetically. That's less problematic for our health than so-called visceral fat, which means around your viscera, around your guts, right?
Yeah,
and so if you've got fat around your liver and your intestine and your pancreas, that's the stuff that's really, really unhealthy. And so by essentially burning that stuff off, using it for fuel rather than storing it, you're inevitably going to improve your health.
You know, there's a lot of people who suffer now with degenerative type of diseases. And I don't know whether you and I talked about this or I read this somewhere, but there are studies now being done, right, that indicate that people who do long-term fasting are having neurogenesis. Is that true?
Yes. I mean, so again, remember, go back to autophagy. And so, I mean, why we're having such massive uptick in neurological disorders, you know, it's an open question, but it could certainly be in part a metabolic issue. And if you're kicking yourself into a recycle mode frequently, it's fairly intuitive that that's probably going to have positive neurogenic effects. And so I honestly think this is something that the fact that we're just now studying this is sort of telling, but I honestly, it should convict Catholics who had fasting as a part of our tradition.
Right.
We dropped it, and now scientists and New Agers in California are picking it up again. Yeah. And so let that be an inspiration to us.
Yeah, God knows what's best for us, right? The way he designed the body.
Absolutely.
Prayer and fasting, both beneficial. Let's take a few calls for you. Let's start in Wausau, Wisconsin with Katie. Katie, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I'll keep it really fast. I was hospitalized 3 years ago with COVID and had blood clots in my lungs and was really sick and almost died. I was in there for a week. And the doctor, we had a California doctor, and he stuck his finger in my face and said, "You need to get the inflammation down in your system." And I didn't know what that meant. Of course, I was heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So I did some research and I got turned on to fasting, and I lost 80 pounds. And I have to get back on it. We went on vacation last year, and I put on about 15, 20 of it. But I'm starting tomorrow. I'm getting back on my fast. But, oh, my goodness, what a blessing. I always said COVID was awful, but for me it was truly a blessing because I learned about fasting and what it has done to my body. And not only fasting, but also I've turned around my eating habits, finding the healthy fats. The healthy oils, the healthy everything.
Yep.
So I just wanted to make a comment. It was a blessing.
Katie, thank you for that. Doctor, follow up on that too in terms of the choices that we make. Because there's two things. I mean, one, I think there's a tremendous psychological dependence on food. People eat when they're stressed, when they're happy, when they're lonely. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons that are triggers for people to eat. They often choose the wrong food. So maybe how do you overcome those psychological hurdles? And then following up on Katie's point, I think it's a really good one. You need to make good food choices when you are fasting.
You do. You do. And a lot of this is unlearning stuff that we thought we knew. So the dumb food pyramid, which was produced by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the competence of the USDA is not health. Their job is to promote American agriculture. That's their one job. We should never have believed that sort of food pyramid. But this idea that you need to eat lots and lots of grains and lots of carbs and limit your fats, it's just not true. It was based on a couple of poorly designed studies. If you look at animals in the wild, they go for the fatty meats. The problem is that we've tended to eat the fats that aren't good for us and not eat the fats that are good for us and then mix them with simple carbs. That's the problem. And so, as she said, she's discovered that fats, the right kinds of fats are good for you. And by the way, as long as you're not mixing with a lot of carbs, that's not what's going to make you fat. And so you've got to unlearn a lot of that stuff. And then, as you said, change our habits. That sounds hard on one side, but you can do this stuff. I can speak for myself. Slowly but surely, I went from 6 little meals a day, really, really low-fat diet, to narrow window of eating all the time, really high-fat, low-carb diet. And it just, you know, you do it slowly over 4 or 5 years, and it becomes what you do, and you reap the benefits from it.
I love it. In terms of fat, I remember when butter was bad and, you know, margarine was great, and now all of a sudden they're saying, oh my gosh, don't go back to butter, right? Butter's good for you. I have a friend that eats, when we go out and we have a steak, he always eats the fat on the steak, but it kind of skews me out. I mean, is it okay to eat that? Is that good for you?
Absolutely. Now, of course,
good fat.
If you're doing that, that butter is fine. Don't panic about the saturated fats. Worry about weird fats that have not been in the human diet for long periods of time. But if humans have been eating something for thousands of years, basically give it the benefit of the doubt, because if it was actually deadly, that group would have gotten weeded out of the gene pool.
So true.
Instead, we invent these weird industrial things like cottonseed oil that are really industrial spinoffs, basically, and decide, okay, that's healthy. Again, based on very limited data. And so the general rule is, if something's been in the human food chain for thousands of years, it's a natural substance, it's close to a whole food, you probably give it the benefit of the doubt. If it's some kind of weird new thing that we've created, doesn't mean it's going to kill you, but, you know, raise the criteria by which you judge those things.
Gotcha. Angel in Chicago, Illinois, thanks for dialing in. Good afternoon, sir.
Hi, good afternoon. I was just calling. I'm a firm believer of fasting, and I always had a dialogue with my family. I just want to know, when in fasting mode for offering for religious purposes, are you allowed to hydrate, or is completely no food and beverage whatsoever during the fasting?
Oh, no, absolutely hydrate. In fact, dry fasting is almost unheard of in the Christian tradition. So Muslims, you know, the Ramadan fast, at least they're strictly observed. There's no eating or drinking between sunrise and sunset, which is really hardcore if you're in a sort of latitude where the day is really long. But you absolutely both can and should hydrate. And in fact, but my definition of fast just means basically non-caloric. Don't consume anything that has significant calories. So unless you're deciding you want to abstain from, say, coffee or tea, coffee and tea is fine. I don't think that breaks the fast. Certainly water does not break the fast. Moreover, when you go into ketosis, as I mentioned earlier, your body loses fluids, and it will actually also lose electrolytes. So when you're first doing this, you actually need to add electrolytes to the water. That means potassium and sodium, actually, in particular, so that you don't mess that up. So if anything, absolutely hydrate, and if anything, hydrate and add electrolytes, at least when you first start doing this.
So if we do long-term fasting and you hit autophagy, you know, the body's immune system's kicking in high gear now and all the benefits are now underway. I always had a question, you know, I take vitamins and I take gummy vitamins, right? Because they're much more enjoyable to eat, but it's like having a handful of candy. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking, does that break your fast when you're taking a bunch of vitamins, a handful of candy?
Not vitamins themselves, but those gummy vitamins are basically glucose and gelatin.
I got to stop.
And so those are caloric. And so I'd say, don't do that.
Boo.
But of course, micronutrients, the vitamins and the minerals, those are effectively non-caloric. And so unless, you know, there are complicated things where you might not even want that going in, but I would say certainly those, and certainly medicines you have to take, don't think of those as fast. And also don't think of the Eucharist either. Okay, there's a few calories. But you're literally talking about calories that your body's going to use up in about 5 minutes. And so, and it's coffee, frankly, coffee, yeah. Black coffee has a few calories,
yeah,
but
right.
it's trivial. So don't worry about that. Now, if you put 2 tablespoons of cream in it, that yeah. would be a different question.
So it doesn't take a whole lot to get you out of autophagy then, is what you're saying? I mean, a handful of vitamins can do that? Or
yeah.
Because some people say, you can fast, but you have to have less than 500 calories or something like that.
Yeah, and so that's true for, there are certain types of fast where there are physical benefits you can get yeah. from fasting. In fact, there's this 5-day fasting mimicking diet in which you keep it way below 500 calories. That's so low that you probably do benefit from some of these things that yeah. we're talking about. But the reality is I've done that some too, and that's almost harder than not eating right. at all because you're eating so little, but you're kind of triggering your body's desire for more food.
Well, doctor, hold the thought. When we come back, we'll take a few more calls. My guest today, Dr. Jay Richards, if you want to read a great book, he wrote one called Eat, Fast, Feast. Heal your body while feeding your soul. It's a Christian guide to fasting. It is a must for your spiritual library, especially if you want to pick up fasting. And I think it's a great thing to do this Lent. We'll take your calls and questions. If you're on hold, I will get you on the air. I know you've been waiting. If you want to get in, feel free to join us right now. It's 888-914-9149. Our conversation continues right after this. Today's programming is brought to you by St. Gregory Recovery Center in Iowa. More information about their faith-centered addiction treatment is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory.
Taking care of business every day.
He has a microphone, and he knows how to use it. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Taking care of business. Hoping to do that, hoping to help you get ready to kick off Lent. And maybe embrace one of the 3 pillars of Lent, and that's fasting. It's maybe the hardest one. Father Rocky, our chief executive officer, off of kids, he says, hey, I'll pray, Drew, you fast. I don't mind praying. Fasting's hard, right? Almsgiving, of course, the third leg, if you're wondering what it is. We're talking today with Dr. Jay Richard about fasting and kind of just a broad view. I've had him on to talk about the spiritual benefits of fasting, the medical benefits of it. I've even seen articles recently about the economic benefits of it. It's growing in popularity because of how efficacious it is for the body. But before I go back to the calls, I just want to hit on one other thing. I think we'd be derelict if I addressed the spiritual benefits of this. And there is a power. And I really want to underline that. I really believe there is a power and an efficacy when you pray and when you fast. The devil hates fasting. If you read the scriptures, it's Matthew 17. The Lord tells us that with fasting and faith, anything and everything is possible. You're praying for a new spouse. You're praying for a better job. You're praying for that cancer. You're praying for those problems that you have. Matthew 17, stand on that scripture. With fasting and with faith, everything is possible. I really believe that. If you want to protect yourself and your family, if you want to see miracles, if you want answered prayers, do what Mary and Joseph did. Do what the great prophets and the saints have done. Do what the Blessed Mother today is urging in many of her apparitions. And that's fast. She once said, and I was always struck by this one statement, she says, little children, the one who prays is not afraid of the future. And the one who fasts is not afraid of evil. Think of the division. Think of the spiritual attacks. I mean, this is a secret weapon that we as Christians have. My guest today, Dr. Jay Richards, also knows the medical benefits of it as well. And I'll tell you what, one final thought here. And we could talk about the medical benefits, the spiritual benefits of it. When I think about fasting, and I'll be honest, I'm very bad at it. I used to be great at it. I used to fast all the time. I'm really, really bad at it right now. And I got to figure out why. But I believe in a time where evil is rising like never before, as we see Satan coming out of the shadows and becoming more aggressive and more visible, have you noticed the correlation between giving up fasting as a church and as a society, giving up fasting in the West, and the rise in demonic infestation? I think Satan today can more easily penetrate the facets of society. When we don't fast, the protective doors are no longer locked. Doctor, I'd love your thoughts on the spiritual aspect of this as well.
I mean, honestly, Drew, that's why I wrote this book. I mean, I'm interested in the fitness stuff, But I felt like, gosh, there's all this good evidence for the physical benefits. That will help make the case that we need to do this and hopefully convince Catholics and other Christians that this is a massive spiritual tool. Because, I mean, honestly, as you said, there's this implication there in the Gospels that something about fasting and praying together, weirdly, that sometimes the fasting enhances the power of prayer. If that's true, then it's like we've got a sword and we've got a shield. And at some point, we decided to drop the shield, or maybe the sword. I don't know which is which. But then we're sort of surprised that, it's weird how the church seems to be in disarray. Children lose their faith. Cultures collapse that were once Christian. And as you said, massive demonic infestation in places that you wouldn't expect. I can't prove it, but there's no doubt that there's a direct historical correlation. And if what Jesus said in the Gospels there, if that's true, then we just shouldn't be surprised. And why on earth wouldn't we try this at this point? I mean, we know that the church did this, that this was a major spiritual practice that was a part of the basic warp and woof of Christian life. It still is in some Christian communities, but mostly not in the West. Why wouldn't we try this and see what happens?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, first of all, thank you for writing the book. I want to recommend it to anyone who is tuning in. If you're thinking about starting fasting, this will open your eyes on a whole number of different areas. And the book is available, as I was just talking to the doctor, you can do a quick search for it online. Check your Catholic bookstore. Check out bookstores in general. But I'm sure Amazon's probably one of the best places to go ahead and to get it. Doctor, let me go to the phones, grab another quick call. Jeff is in New Berlin, Texas. Jeff, good afternoon.
Hello, this is Jeff.
Hi, Jeff. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. In November, I continued a spiritual journey that I'd started probably 2 months prior, and I decided to go on a fast. And this is before I knew that it was the trend now, the fad, hopefully not a fad, but a continuing thing. Anyway, popular. And the number 21 stuck out in my mind, so I decided on a 21-day fast. And I purchased the doctor's book along with another devotional book that I would read every day.
Yep.
The fast itself, y'all have talked a lot about the physical things. I basically ate one meal a day between 4 and 8, maybe a small pork chop, about 8 ounces of frozen veggies, and about 2 handfuls of shelled peanuts, and just water. I was successful. I really only got hungry was after Christmas. I actually had a little bit more because I went to my son and daughter-in-law's house to celebrate Christmas. But the next 2 days, 2.5 days,
so
I didn't eat at all. So
Jeff, what'd you think of the doctor's book? What'd you think of Dr. Chay's book?
I honestly, what I read, and I read about half of it because I did not go in the progressive, the progression. Okay. I just started straight out with one meal a day.
Wow.
And about half of the book seems to be about progressing up to that stage, which is great.
Yeah.
But what I really enjoyed was the spiritual part and the history part. And I ate those up.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for calling. I'm glad you shared it. I'm glad it was successful. So let's pick up on what he said there. I mean, we can talk more about the spiritual. We'll take some more calls here. But he talks about the progression. For those who are listening saying, okay, I want to start. I can't do peanuts and a pork chop and some frozen veggies, the person's saying. How do you build up to having a healthy fast, something that helps the body and also amplifies the power of the prayer and feeds the soul?
Well, here's the key thing is that if you're going to sort of take on a new spiritual discipline, you want to make sure that you're able to do it. And so very often what we do is it's like people that want to get in shape. I'm going to go run a marathon. And then they think that they're going to be running a marathon when they haven't gotten off the couch in 6 months. That's just not how it works. And that's not how it works with this. But Christians will often think, well, it's supposed to be a sacrifice, and so it should be hard, which is true. It should be a sacrifice, but it should not be torture. If it's torture, this is not going to be a long-term spiritual practice. It's like, what if every time you prayed, you got sick and threw up? You wouldn't say, well, that's okay, it's a sacrifice. If you talk to a spiritual director, they say, you're doing something wrong, obviously. That's not supposed to have a physical reaction. And so what I really want people to do is, okay, ease into this, both by adjusting what you eat at the beginning, so your body gets metabolically flexible. In other words, it gets used to metabolizing fat for fuel. Most of us, unless we've intentionally done that, it's just not. We've got a hybrid car where our bodies are like a Prius that has never used its gas tank. And so you're going to have some bumps as you make this transition in ketogenic eating and then start narrowing the window in tough time in which you eat. It really takes your body, guess what, about 6 weeks to really adjust to this thing. And that's just about how long Lent is. And so if you do that, start by eating ketogenically. I describe how to do that in the book, and then narrow the window each week. So you start with about an 8-hour time window when you eat, and then you narrow it to 4, and then at least a few days of the week, do what our previous caller said, 1 hour per day for, say, 3 days out of the week. Once you get there, by the time you get to Holy Week, you'll be in a position, if you want to fast from, say, Thursday until Easter Sunday. And I promise you, the feast that follows that fast will be an entirely different experience from the feast that we have now, which just means eating slightly more than we normally do.
That's well said. Raphael in San Diego, California, you're on the air with Dr. Jay Richards. Good afternoon. I think some people are in delay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here.
No, go right ahead. Good to have you with us.
Okay, so... yeah, I have a lot of experience with fasting and prayer, and I've been healed from so many ailments that I've had. But the first time I did it, I did a 3-day fast, no food, only water, and a lot of prayer. And I did it on a Friday. I think it was Good Friday. And I didn't eat anything. I drank a lot of water. I slept a lot. When I break my fast, I usually do a bone broth with, it's caldo de res, which is something we eat in the Mexican culture a lot. I break the fast with the soup first, just the broth, and little by little, I start to incorporate the meat. I'll have some avocados and stuff like that, kind of like what you were talking about, proteins and fats. But breaking the fast is just as important as starting the fast. You also prepare for it, and you do the same thing with the fats and the proteins. But anyhow, I just wanted to throw that in. And like I said, it's made me discipline myself even from sin. When you can control your body that way, you can stop yourself from doing things that you shouldn't be doing. So I've had a lot of blessings, and that's all. I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you so much, Doctor. I'll let you respond.
No, that's exactly right. And especially if you do a 3-day fast, your stomach has shrunk. You don't have a lot of digestive fluids. Your intestines are empty, right? And so you don't want to suddenly just jump into a steak. And actually, starting with bone broth is a really, really good way of doing that. And that's often exactly what the advice is. So you ease in. So, like, let's say you do that 3-day fast during Holy Week on Easter Sunday. Ease in over a period of 1 or 2 hours in which you start. Right, honestly, bone broth is probably the right thing to do so that you don't just dig right in, because that also helps you kind of discipline yourself so that you don't just drop whole hog. Because what he said there at the end is exactly right, that if you can discipline your body in these kind of small habitual ways, you're going to discipline your spirit, because that's what I mean. We are body soul unities. These things are absolutely connected, and so that's why I think that's why this is a spiritual discipline, because we're not just spirits trapped in bodies. You know, we are embodied persons, and the great thing about fasting is it basically channels our metabolism into spiritual discipline, and so it captures the whole person, and that's what I think is amazing about it. And I think that's part of why God wants us to do this. It reminds us that we're body and not just spirit.
Yeah, it's so well said. All right, let me grab another call or two for you. Maybe do I have time or should I break? All right, let me take this right now. We'll go to Frank in Deer Lodge, Montana. Frank, thanks for calling in. Good afternoon.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Dr. J, bought your book last year during Lent and read it. Bought the Jason Fung books, Diabetes Code, and Obesity Code, went through all those. My doctor's on board with it. Diagnosed as a diabetic 13 years ago.
Wow.
Dropped 50 pounds.
Wow.
I had a little hiccup from the COVID. Dang, almost killed me. That's the only time my A1Cs were out of whack this last this last trip to the doctor. My doc's trying to get me to do a 17-7, but I've been doing the 16-8.
Yep.
And like you, you know, the long fast for a colonoscopy, I knew I could go 56 hours. I just want to let you know, they say you can't cure diabetes. My doctor says if I live the rest of my life, I'm 63.
Yep.
He says if I live my life like I'm doing right now, he says I'll live my life as if I've never had diabetes.
Wow.
That's fantastic. Well, I love that.
Fasting works.
Absolutely. It's wonderful. And, of course, you mentioned Jason Fung, who wrote the foreword to the book. And Jason is a physician in Toronto that has a clinic that certainly reverses obesity, but also in many cases reverses type 2 diabetes with fasting and ketogenic eating. And people say you can't reverse type 2 diabetes, but he's doing it.
Wow.
And we know that people, you end up with type 2 diabetes very often because of the way that we eat. The idea that you can't reverse it by changing the way you eat. I mean, we know it can happen. Now, if you're on insulin, here's the crucial thing. If you're actually taking insulin, you definitely want to be under the guidance of the doctor because, you know, once you start doing this, you're going to need to draw down on the insulin. That's the key thing. But absolutely, I mean, one of the most obvious physical things that you can treat is obesity and type 2 diabetes with this.
Yeah, and I've had to take a break. We come back, we'll grab more calls, but maybe we can pick it up on this aspect too. I think one of the problem with obesity in the country today is more people are struggling with insulin, you know, insensitivity. You know, they're fasting brings about insulin sensitivity. So intermittent fasting has been shown to improve insulin sensitivity. And as you point out, lower the risk of type 2 diabetes and other metabolic disorders. Let's talk about that. I think that's really an important part of this. People wonder why they can't lose weight. I think a lot of it has to do with insulin. I'd love your take on that. What fasting does. We just heard a man who was a diabetic for 13 years saying, hey, no longer like that anymore. If you want to get us, final segment is coming. If you want to join us, the final segment is coming up. Dr. Jay Richards is my guest. He wrote a book called Eat, Fast, Feast, Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul, A Christian Guide to Fasting. Getting you ready for Ash Wednesday and your Lent. Feel free to dial in. I'll be right back.
Wish you could hit rewind on that convo? Listen to the podcast on relevantradio.com or anywhere podcasts can be found.
Today's programming is brought to you by St. Gregory Recovery Center in Iowa. More information about their faith-centered addiction treatment is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory.
Drew Mariani is here for you on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. Getting you ready for Ash Wednesday tomorrow. As Catholics, we are required or asked to fast. And this Lent's something I'm going to try to do with greater vigor and in greater earnest, if you will. I think it's beneficial both to the prayer life, to the soul, and in particular, to the body. And we're talking today with Dr. Jay Richards. He wrote a great book. We'll get you plugged into it. You can do this. And by the way, the book is Eat, Fast, Feast. I'll just give you the first three words. If you do a search for that, Dr. Jay Richards, it'll come up. You've already heard testimonies from a number of people who've read it and have found the benefits of it. When we left off, we were talking about insulin and insulin resistance. And that occurs when your body's cells become less responsive to the hormone insulin, and that could lead to high blood pressure. Sugar levels increase, you can experience insulin resistance, you can pack on the pounds. You know, what does fasting do to that? There's lots of ways you can fight that. Of course, exercise and losing weight and eating healthy, et cetera. But fasting, I think, is a key part of that. I think there's an epidemic of this right now, doctor. I think that's why we see so much obesity in the country. There's so much sugar in our food. I think there's a great resistance to it right now. But I'd love your thoughts on it. I'm not a physician. I want your take on how you read that and why maybe this is one of the reasons fasting is so powerful, so effective.
Well, it is because, and I think that's the reality is that all of us, without really realizing it, it was a combination of, first of all, sugar just being really easy to process, tasty. We like it, and it doesn't really satiate. So unlike fat and protein, I mean, if you eat a big fatty steak, the reality is it you eat too much and your body tells you, well, it's sugary things. You can eat it, and you might feel full for 10 minutes, and then you want it again. And so because of that, then this idea that we don't want to eat high-fat diets, so we eat mm-hmm. low-fat diets, which means we actually add carbohydrates. You got to add something. And so that and carbs, of course, turn to sugar. And so what is insulin? Insulin is this – think of it as a signal in your body. It's a hormone that your body uses, produces essentially to keep the sugar out of your bloodstream. So sugar floating around your bloodstream is very dangerous. And so if you consume something, quickly turns to sugar, it's in your bloodstream. And so insulin gets produced. And what insulin does is it tells the cells in your liver and your muscles, open up and absorb this sugar. Is what insulin does. And so the more sugar you eat, the more insulin your body's going to produce, the more that's going to happen. But so what happens when all your organs are full up? They don't have any room for any more sugar. Well, what they do is they develop resistance to the signals of insulin. So your body has to keep producing more insulin to do this. That insulin resistance is your body basically saying, okay, no more sugar. And then what your body does is it takes that sugar, it sends it back to the liver, and the liver converts it to fat. And that's why you get fat around your liver and everywhere else. And so sugar ends up becoming fat. And over time, your body gets more and more and more resistant to the signals of insulin. Now, what's the long-term effect of that? The long-term effect of that is that you become really good at storing fat on your body, converting sugar to fat on your body, and never using the fat as fuel. That's the key problem. And so fasting and ketogenic eating, it's designed to reverse that so that your body learns to use fat, slowly lowers the amount of insulin in your system, and then your organs become more insulin sensitive. So it just basically reverses all the damage that you've done. And that's why this weird, obscure condition called insulin resistance ends up being behind all these ailments from inflammation and blood pressure and type 2 diabetes and obesity. And fasting directly challenges that.
I love it. Well, let's grab a few calls. Time goes so quickly here on the show. Nina's been waiting forever. She's in New Mexico, and she's got a question for you. Nina, good afternoon. Sorry, it's Nina. Good afternoon.
That's okay. Thank you for taking my call. My husband and I were the ages of 68 to 73. I think we eat pretty healthy with, you know, chicken and fish and stuff like that, and maybe red meat a couple of times a week. How would the doctor say our metabolism, or how could we fast because of our age?
Well, and so there's no reason if you're not otherwise healthy that you can't fast. Now, if you're an advanced age and you're really thin and you're sick, then that's a different thing. So the church and medicine always recognizes pregnant women and people that are sick and small children, they are the exceptions. But there's no reason you shouldn't be able to fast at any particular age, as long as you're generally healthy. That's the key thing. And so I would say that the same general thing is going to apply to you, though. The thing that you might need to get used to, though, is that eating lots of fat is okay, and is fat, in fact, is healthy. And what you ought to do is just that you need to combine that high, healthy, natural fat diet with a drastic reduction in carbohydrates, at least for the beginning when you're adjusting. That's for a lot of people, it's a psychological hump that they have to get over.
Nina, thank you. It's a great question. I only have a few minutes. I want to grab a few other calls. A lot of people patiently waiting here. Nancy's in Chicago. Nancy, good afternoon.
Hi, I know we're ending here quickly. Doctor, I'm 42. I weekly 72-hour fast. I lift heavy. I sprint. I mean, optimal health is my goal. But a lot of the women that I that we have those same goals, they're more eat six times a day, no fasting, high protein, moderate carbs and fat to maintain muscle and to balance hormones. And I can't find a lot of information about what, strict fast and some what I'm doing right now. If how does it affect women? I can't find much information. It's always men-based.
That's right. And so there's actually a book, and I'm not endorsing it, called Fast Like a Woman, which argues that women's their cycles and their hormonal profile means that women should really have a different fasting regimen. I've not found any evidence historically that men are in general significantly different from women, and the metabolic effects of these are radically different. Though I would say you want to sort of focus individually. Now, this idea that you need to eat frequently in order to maintain muscle, it's just not true. I believed this too until I looked at the data. But in fact, if you fast, as opposed to reducing calories, the first thing that happens if you fast for 24 hours Your body doesn't go into starvation mode. It actually increases norepinephrine and the kind of energy hormones, and it increases human growth hormone, which is the hormone that preserves lean body mass. In fact, it takes 5 days of fasting for your metabolism to get back to where it was started. And so it's just simply not true that you need to eat frequently in order to maintain muscle. You do need to have enough protein, and you need to have resistance training, and you need to have a recovery time so that you don't break yourself down. Right. But it's just a myth that you need to eat frequently if you want to maintain lean muscle mass.
All right. Well, the doctor's book is Eat Fast Feast, How to Heal the Body While Feeding the Soul, A Christian Guide to Fasting by Dr. Jay Richards. Doctor, I only have a few moments left. I'm not sure if I can get any more calls. My apologies to anyone who's still on hold, but final thoughts from you in this remaining moment.
Honestly, Drew, well, thanks so much for spending a whole hour on this subject. I mean, I'm obviously passionate about it. I think that we're just getting started. When I first wrote the book, I thought, okay, well, everybody's going to hear about this. But the reality is that most people still haven't really tried this. Most Catholics haven't really tried it. We think that this thing that we do on Ash Wednesday, where we eat a couple of smaller meals and a third meal, that is residual fasting. That's what's left over from a tradition in which Christians really did fast all day on Wednesdays and Fridays throughout the year, and then huge fast seasons in Advent and Lent. And so honestly, if you're healthy and are worried about this, but thinking about doing it, use Lent. Use this next 6.5 weeks to transition into a fasting lifestyle and make it a part of your life going forward.
Doctor, thank you. I hope you have a blessed Lent. I'll be keeping you in my prayers later today when I spend time with the Lord. And I look forward to our next conversation. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Drew.
All right, it's Dr. Jay Richards. I'm out of time for the day. Until tomorrow, may God bless you. Have a great day.